Coming up, we get Tom Haverstraw talking about the NBA's bottom 10 teams having 44 straight combined losses. We talk about some of those tanking teams. We get into what the NBA could do to improve this lull we're in the middle of March right now. We get into the Hornets win streak, the Celtics with Tatum return, a little bit on the Sixers, and a lot else that's coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We get a good one today. Tom Haverstraw joining me. Tom, how are you?
Dude, I'm good. How are you, Kev?
I'm doing excellent today, Tom. We have something you discovered over on X you posted yesterday. The NBA bottom 10 teams had a collective 40-game losing streak last night that increased to 44 combined losses for the bottom 10 teams in the NBA. Kings lost 2 in a row, Pacers 7 in a row, Nets 9 in a row, and so on all through the bottom 10. Everybody's lost. That's going to end tonight for what it's worth on Thursday, because we have the Wizards hosting the Jazz and the Kings hosting the Pelicans. So these teams are going to lose. But bottom 10 team, Tom, lost 44 games in a row. How about that for the 10th race, huh?
You know, when things are so bad, you just got to laugh at it. That's what I feel like right now with the tanking that's going on and removing star players from the games. And, you know, like we look at these standings and we recognize the Milwaukee Bucks are playing Giannis now. The New Orleans Pelicans, they don't have an incentive to tank because they don't have their first round pick this year. But still, when you look across the bottom 10 in the NBA, it's a whole lot of losing. 44-game losing streak. And I think that's understating things, Kev. Like, when I discovered this last night as I was getting ready for work, it was the Blazers-Memphis game. I was just seeing, like, how are the Memphis Grizzlies doing in their maximizing their ping pong balls? And then I went to tankathon.com and I noticed, oh my God, all the teams are losing right now at historic rates. And I was like, even if the Blazers beat the Memphis Grizzlies, I don't even know if they're going to pick up any games here. And sure enough, the Blazers beat Memphis without Jaren Jackson Jr., without Zach Edey, without a bunch of their players. And it just seems like this is what's happening across the league. Kev, I have a little thing here that I prepared for your show that I'm very excited to present. Can I go a little deeper on this whole 44 please, game losing streak?
Please, Tom, go as deep as you want to go. Go very deep.
Okay. So if you notice in that tankathon site, the bottom 10 teams, they have a last 10 games column where that you see that they're like 2-8. The Kings are 2-8. The Pacers are 2-8. The Nets are 1-9. Well, a lot of those wins, Kev, are coming against bottom 10 teams. So if you just look at the bottom 10 teams, they're collectively 26-74 in their last 10 games, and that equates to a 21-win team. But the problem with that analysis, Kev, is that a lot of those wins are coming against those same bottom 10 teams. So, like, if you look at the Bulls, right, the Bulls ended their losing streak against the Bucks, right? And that ended their 11-game losing streak. Otherwise, the losing streak would be alive and well. The Brooklyn Nets are 1-9 in their last 10 games, but the one win came against the Chicago Bulls. So I actually went into this, and I imagine that they're like two leagues, okay? There's the A League, which is the top 20 teams that are not trying to lose, and then there's the B League. The B League is this bottom 10 team league. And I wanted to know, if you just looked at the bottom 10 teams against the A teams, what would their record be?
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Play the B League from Brooklyn's recent schedule. The Brooklyn Nets are on an 18-game losing streak. Okay. They haven't beaten a non-bottom team in 2 months, not since January 4th, a Jokic-less Nuggets team. Okay. The Kings, they're 2-8 in their last 10. What's wrong with that? Well, two of those wins came against B League teams, and it turns out if you strip those away, they're on a 15-game losing streak against A League teams. The Mavericks are on a 12-game losing streak. The Bulls are on a 10-game losing streak. The Grizzlies are on an 8-game losing streak. The Wizards are on a 7-game losing streak. So, you get the picture. Is that it's even more bleak when you look at these games in which they're not playing each other and one team has to win. So if you strip out those B League games, they're a collective 9-56 when they're not playing each other. It's an 11 win pace over an 82 game season. Kev, it gets worse because of those nine games.
How does it get worse? How does it possibly get worse?
We're going to go below subterranean. We're going underneath the water here. If you take out New Orleans and Milwaukee, because look, New Orleans, they're not tanking, so to speak. They're just bad, right? They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. And if you look at the B team schedule, they're 3-1 against B, bottom 10 teams and 3-3 against all other teams. Milwaukee is 4-4 against these A-list teams. And so if you take those two teams away, because one team has Giannis and the other team has no pick, collectively, they're 2-52. The B League teams, when they're not playing each other and you strip out the Milwaukee and the New Orleans teams, they're 2-52 in their last 54 games. So Kev, the two wins, if you remember when Utah beat Miami and Bam Adebayo had that amazing quote when he said, we've got to find a way to win against losing teams or teams that are trying to lose. That was Utah over Miami. That was one of the two wins. The other one, we had Indiana over New York in an overtime game. So they needed overtime in order to beat an A team. Otherwise, if you take those two games out, the B League teams are 0-52 against A League teams. So, Kev,
crazy.
I think looking at that 44 losing streak, that actually underestimates how bad these bottom 10 teams, when they're not playing against each other and one team has to win, they're basically winless over the last 50 games.
Which is exactly what's going to happen tonight. The Kings or the Pelicans are going to win. The Wizards or the Jazz are going to win. So they're going to get they're going to end their losing streak against one of the B League teams, as you said. That's great framing. And it does feel like that there is sort of that divide in the NBA right now with those bottom nine-ish. I mean, the Bucks, they're trying to win. They're just really bad right now with Giannis back. But bottom nine, bottom 10 teams, and then everybody else after that, teams competing. The Warriors are sliding. They're without their guys right now in the middle. But teams in the middle and teams at the top are definitely in a different level than those bottom 10 teams. And I think thinking about those bottom teams, Tom, so nine teams, because as you said, the Pelicans don't have the rights to their own pick. The Kings, Pacers, Nets, Wizards, Jazz, Mavericks, Grizzlies, Bulls, Bucks. Of those nine teams, is there a most ethical lottery winner in your eyes?
Most ethical lottery winner. I think it's Indiana. I think it's Indiana, right?
Really?
Why? Well, like they lost Tyrese Haliburton to an Achilles tear in the NBA Finals in Game 7. So right off the bat, you're like, that team deserves some sort of charity for their ethical play this season. They're playing Pascal Siakam for almost every game this year. The one time that they did sit him, they got hammered for it, which I think was a little over the top by the league office. There's other stuff going on that teams haven't been fined for. I think it's the Indiana Pacers, Kev. Who do you have as the most ethical loser in this group?
It's not the Pacers. The Pacers, I mean, look, you say they might have went over the top with that decision to find them, but you could have fined them for many, many things. You could have fined Rick Carlisle in December for going 12 deep into his rotation and playing lineups with no ball handlers. You could fine them for sitting Zubats here. Zubats, they acquire him at the deadline. He's played 89% of his possible games, one of the most durable players in the NBA for 7 years with the Clippers. He played 466 out of 522 possible games, and he's out right now for the Pacers for a left ankle sprain he suffered in December. He's out now after playing games in January. He missed only one game after his return from that sprained ankle in January. Only one game. He was playing the best basketball of his entire season for the Clippers after a slow start. And he's out right now, hasn't played, no sign that he will play. So they traded that pick to the Clippers, top four protected. And now they're sitting the guy they got back for God knows how long. They're tanking their asses off. The Pacers have done it all year long. Carlisle's the best tanker in basketball. That's why he's put on public pressure against the NBA, because he knows what he's doing. So it's not the Pacers. They'd be a nice story. They lose Haliburton. They'd be a nice story, but not the most ethical answer. I think the only answer, really, of those bottom 10, and for what it's worth, I don't care about it being an ethical winner. I want the most entertaining possible outcome, and that's the Thunder or the Spurs moving up. I want fun. I want excitement and chaos on lottery night. But the most ethical one is Giannis and the Bucks moving up to number one, because they actually brought their megastar back. He's actually out there after suffering a calf strain. That they're actually making an effort. They were making some positive progress for a little bit before this recent skid with Kevin Porter Jr. and Ryan Rollins out there. They were playing pretty well. And then Giannis came back, and the team hasn't played well recently. They lose by 27 to the Celtics, by 18 to the Hawks. But I think it's the Bucks as the quote-unquote most ethical, but also one of the more entertaining possible outcomes. Not that they can move up to number one. So they're not a winner, but they could move up to number two or number three or number four. Just to make that very clear here, considering the Hawks' rights to swap with the Pelicans or the Bucks. So the Bucks can't get number one, but they can win by moving to two, three, or four. So I'd say the Bucks here, Tom.
It's not a bad pick. And I say Indiana, but you raised some pretty good points there. I feel like Rick Carlisle also, he put out a statement yesterday that said, or at least he answered a question about Zubats' availability, and he said something interesting. He said, "We're not going to put him out there unless he's 100%. So what if he's 99% ready? Like, what player at this stage of their career is at 100%? So it's all just, it's posturing here. Rick Carlisle saying he will play at some point this season.
Oh, yeah. We'll see.
Okay, and then what's to say that he doesn't have a Lauri Markkanen injury in practice? And, oh, we got to do an MRI, and doth protest too much. The Utah Jazz put out a statement about the particulars of Markkanen's injury, and it was like the most mumbo-jumbo to say he has a bruised hip. You know? They could have just said he has a bruised hip, but instead they had a very, very specific, lot of big words in there, $12 words from the medical folks over there with Utah. And I feel like we might be headed there with Ivica Zubac, where they say, hey, he turned his ankle again at shoot around, walking around, running through plays, and it looks like on the MRI, and then just has like a paragraph worth of big medical jargon in there. So you're right. Pacers probably not the most ethical.
You know what team the tanking tactics I admire most? They traded away half their roster. They have 8-9 guards on the team, the Chicago Bulls, and they had the moment of the tank race the other night. Rob Dillingham grabs a rebound, dribbles the ball up the floor, and he dribbles it off his back foot. I just heard like the Price is Right losing siren. Bum, 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 bum. They're in that play. It's the funniest play so far. I mean, it's number one, like a SportsCenter top 10 tanking plays of the season. This is number one. Rob Dillingham dribbling the ball off his back foot forward into the hands of Jalen Williams over his head. That's so good. I loved it.
What is the best way, the funniest way to get the ball to the other team? I think he just figured it out. Is a behind the back. Was he trying to do like the Jay Will, like off the back elbow? I don't know, man. The Bulls, like if you want to talk ethics, the Bulls, by giving into the tank and finally admitting like they should be playing for ping pong balls after like 15 straight years of being mid. Is that ethical in your mind? Like what the Bulls are trying to do?
Yeah, if you factor in like past performance, like past decisions. Sure. Yeah. I think in that sense, maybe it is. It's great that they woke up and decided, oh, wait a minute, we should try to lose games instead of being stuck in the play-in again. Here you go, Charlotte. Let's make it easy for you to take that spot for us. Sure, in that sense, maybe it is a little ethical, but I'm not factoring in past year performance. That's the funny thing, Tom, right? Like they've lost 9 out of 10. They're just plummeting down the standings, except they're not. Because everybody else is losing. They're still 3.5 back from Dallas. So, I mean, all this losing just to hold your spot, kind of disappointing. I think the other team I think about sometimes when it comes to this pivot was the Brooklyn Nets. They've lost 9 in a row at this point. They've won, I think, 2 games in the 2026 calendar year at this point. And I was looking at Michael Porter Jr.'s numbers because, you know, earlier in the year, he looked like an all-star. He at one point this season, he was averaging 25.6 points per game on 39.8% from three. And then he had his career, his season high against the Denver Nuggets. MPJ is 38 against the Nuggets. And it's like, oh my God, they lost out on this guy. They have Cam Johnson. This sucks for Denver. ever since that game, Michael Porter Jr. is averaging only 19.2 points per game on 23.5% from three. That's down from 25.6 points, 39.8% prior to his season high 38 against the Denver Nuggets. So he's fallen off a cliff, as have the entire Brooklyn Nets roster. So just it's like he for him, he's like, I had my 38 against my former team. I proved they made a mistake to trade me. I'm done. Time for my offseason ever since then.
It is crazy, right? Because the NBA wants everyone to believe that these games are on the up and up, that everyone's trying to win, that everyone is, the incentive is the number one thing, which is trying to score more points than the opponent. But you have the Brooklyn Nets where it's like, everyone knows that they want to make sure they maximize this pick because they don't control, you know, the future picks as much as they'd like. And Michael Porter Jr., if he continues to play this well out of his mind, it's going to hurt their chances. And when he gets the satisfaction of having that big night against his former team, he might look at it like, all right, I established that I can be the alpha and that I can be a good scorer in today's NBA as the number one option. And I got the emotional lift of beating my former team and doing that that amazing performance, and then just pack it up. And so then you have a situation where they're on an 18-game losing streak that is a shadow 18-game losing streak because their only wins over the last 2 months have been coming against those bottom 10 teams that are trying to lose. And I feel like Brooklyn fans, they saw what happened last year's draft and they're like, we just need one of these top three picks. Let's do whatever we can. Enough of these like five first round picks in the back half of the first round. That's not going to do it for us. And this team looks totally different if AJ DeBonsa or Cam Boozer's there. And I get it. It is a perfect storm. We should keep reiterating this. I don't think every draft class is going to be as good as this one. But I don't think we're going to have a situation where these teams are going to have a flattened odds like it currently is set up. The NBA is reportedly looking at all these measures, I think half measures, these tweaks to try to make this a better situation. But these teams know, hey, we got to maximize this window because Adam Silver can't really, as much as he wants to fine us, he's not going to pull ping pong balls off the table for us. So we got to tank right now over the next month and a half. And here we have it. A 2-52 record for the bottom eight teams against each other or against all other teams.
Remarkable. Remarkable. The team in the standings that's currently 11th is your Portland Trailblazers, Tom. And I got to say, if there's any team I'll be rooting for to win the lottery, Portland's up there. Right now, 11th best odds if they do lose in the play-in, 9.4% chance at top four, 2% chance at number one. They'd have to lose in the play-in. You know, Denny should be back at some point soon, but they're playing their veterans. They're not tanking. They're competing. They're trying to win. Talk about most ethical possible teams to move up into the top four to number one. And most interesting, Portland, considering the template they have, the foundation they have with this current roster, if they added a blue chip prospect on top of this, could potentially be a team that's contending for many years to come. So I root for a team like that. I root for chaos with OKC and San Antonio moving up with the Clippers pick for the Thunder or the Hawks pick for the Spurs. I do root for that, but I also root for some of these teams where it's like, okay, Portland got AJ DeBonsa? Portland added Cam Boozer? That would be amazing if that were to happen. So I root for something like that with your Blazers. Though, Tom, I'm sure you got to say, well, they're competing for the playoffs, right?
Well, I would say it is ethical in the sense that Denny Avdia has been trying to play through this back strain, and he had to come out of the game a few nights ago where he played like 1 minute and then it locked up on him. And I will say, like, if they do get the number one overall pick or move up on draft night, it would be a bummer because that would mean they're out of the playoffs, right? They didn't make the playoffs and they would lose in the play-in. But look at in terms of the ethics of Drew Holiday is still playing high minutes. He had 35-11 last night against the Memphis Grizzlies. He's had the most efficient three-game stretch of his career over his last three games. Rob Williams III has been balling out. He's leading the NBA in three-point blocks. A center is leading the NBA off the bench, playing like 15, 20 minutes, not on back-to-backs, and he's leading the NBA in three-point blocks. He's been a monster for the Blazers. Donovan Klingon had basically a double-double last night before he got ejected from the game for giving out an extra elbow out there. Blazers are really trying. They are. Shaedon Sharpe's been hurt. Denny Avdia has been out. But Matisse Thybulle is playing. Drew Holiday's been playing really well. And Rob Williams, this is a team that's built to win games if Denny Avdia can be healthy again with that back strain. I'll remind people, they're a top 10 team when they shoot at least 33% from downtown. So like, if they have Denny Avdia and they make the playoffs, they're a top 10 team as long as they get solid three-point shooting. V. Krejci's been an awesome addition for the Blazers. And I think they need to play him more because they're desperate for three-point shooting. Any three-point shooting on this team means that they're going to be a top 10 team. And so we'll see what happens. Anything can happen in the play-in tournament, but I'm with you. Of course, I'm biased, but feels like they're trying to win every single game out there. And I think to a detriment in some cases, because Danny wants to play so badly, but his back is not cooperating like he wants.
And we'll be right back after this break. We're recording this live on YouTube. Appreciate it if you are watching us live. Please give us a like in the YouTube chat. DC Wayne said, Adam Silver should be ashamed. The flopping, the egregious tanking, the extreme restrictions on the salary cap costing role players millions, calling the NBA a highlight-based sport. Just terrible, said DC Wayne. I mean, look, Adam is under a lot of criticism right now. I think he's feeling it from media prior to the All-Star break. We heard it in the lead up there with all the tanking. He's right now, fans are still annoyed with everything right now. Like I said at the time of the All-Star break, I think when sometimes in life where you find out who someone really is, whether it's a friend, family member, or yourself, it's when you're against the wall, when you're under pressure. And with Adam Silver, this is, I think, a situation this summer and in the coming year or two, we're going to find out who he really is as a commissioner. And so I look forward to seeing what Adam Silver does with the tanking. I look forward to seeing what he does when it comes to addressing some of the stuff right now in the NBA with the standings and the tanking. Is there ways to incentivize things from the top to the bottom? Are there ways to curtail the losing? I think this is going to be where this guy who's installed the play-in tournament, the NBA Cup, they've experimented with things over the years, different all-star formats and all that. He's shown a willingness to try things. I look forward to seeing what that guy does now, where criticism has ramped up more than it's ever has been. And like, when it comes to ideas, Tom, for the NBA, Ryan over on Threads, I did a little Q&A on Threads, and Ryan said, what's next for the NBA playoffs? Because the play-in hasn't helped competitiveness in the bottom of the league. Is it time to remove conference affiliation and reward the top 16 teams? Oh. And I wonder if when the NBA expands, whenever they move to 31 or 32 teams, will we see Adam Silver make a change along these lines? Just go to conference list, top 16 teams. Because, I mean, I think travel is really the only pushback, and then tradition is the only other pushback. But if you look at it right now, the top 16 teams, we'd have Thunder, Warriors, Pistons, Heat, Spurs, Magic, Celtics, Sixers, Knicks, Suns, Rockets, Raptors, Wolves, Lakers, Cavs, Nuggets. Those would be our first round matchups if it were the current top 16 teams. Would you be in favor of something like this, Tom? Do you think it would be better? Do you think it would improve the quality of the end of the regular season where we're in this lull right now?
100%. It's the most ethical way to do it. And the NBA has benefited this year because the Western Conference and the East has not been so lopsided this year. It's fairly even this year. But this is most a problem when the Western Conference is so much better, as it has historically been, than the Eastern Conference. And so, you know, we've heard it so much with LeBron and how he had such an easy road to get to the NBA Finals with the Cavs and the Heat that we should go to 1 through 16. I think that was when it was at its strongest. I like this. I would add another rule, which we've talked about before. I think the top seeds should be able to pick their opponent, especially in an age where there's so many injured stars, that you could have a team where they're the number three team in the standings, or the number four team in the standings, but they just lost their best player. And maybe the number one seed, the Detroit Pistons, wants to face the New York Knicks without Jalen Brunson or something like that. Or the Pistons would rather face Philadelphia if Tyrese Maxey was out. That's the sort of thing that I think would juice up a lot of energy and enthusiasm, is if the first round opponents could pick their the top seeds could pick their first round opponents, and it would be a lot more fun. It would be a lot more dramatic. It would be a lot more messy in the league, and I think it would draw a lot more interest if that were to be the case. But I can understand why we'll never see the 1-16 tournament, because the Eastern Conference owners don't want it. If they see that historically they've had a cakewalk to the NBA Finals, why would the East teams vote for that? But again, this is Adam Silver's job, is to convince the owners, the people that he works for, and say, this is for the betterment of the league. Think about the logo. Think about the NBA. The NFL, I feel like, does a much better job at protecting the shield, so to speak. And it's time for the owners to look at the big picture here about the NBA draft, about the draft lottery odds, about the 1-16 tournament, and start thinking, what's best for the NBA brand? And I think these tweaks would be so much better for the NBA brand, even if it might be a disadvantage to the Eastern Conference. I think that is something that Adam Silver has to do a better job of. He's done great on the TV media deals, but in terms of getting the owners to line up and realize what's best for the league, I think there's some work to be done there.
You know, the NBA right now, Tom, is in its annual lull, right? I think at this point, the standings are the standings. We know who's going to be in the playoffs for the most part. College basketball is in its final stretch. March Madness about to begin. The World Baseball Classic just began this week, and that was great a few years back. It's probably going to be great again this year. NFL is in the middle of free agency right now, and the draft lead up, and the NBA, we're just kind of waiting for the playoffs to begin. We're just kind of waiting 6-7 weeks right now, and Adam Silver's going to do something about that, because you can't lose interest from people down the final stretch of the season. That's why I've always been a supporter of letting the top seeds choose their opponent. You have to let, I think Adam Silver really needs to think about this. The NBA has to let the top playoff seeds choose their first round opponent. The D-League did this back in 2008 through 2014. They experimented with this in the then D-League, now the G-League. Because in the NBA, you have incentives. Right now, the incentives that are a negative that they need to figure out. If you're at the bottom, the worse your record, the better your lottery odds. Your incentives in the middle with the play-in. If you're the 7 or the 8 seed, you win one game, you get the 7 seed. If you're the 9 or 10 seed, you have to win 2 games and you'll get the 8 seed. The 5th and 6th seeds, you get a guaranteed playoff spot. That's your incentive. But the current incentives at the top of the league, 1-4, you get home court advantage. That's great. That if you're 1, you get home court through the entire conference playoffs. If you're a 2-3, you do for the first and second round, right? All the money that comes from the more home games, there's incentive there, but it's not enough. Because does it really matter if the Celtics, the Knicks, or the Cavs are 2, 3, or 4? We might even see one of those teams lose on purpose down the stretch of the season in order to get a different seeding, a better playoff matchup. Mm. Because getting a better playoff matchup is the greater incentive than being a 2 instead of a 3. So right now in the NBA, it doesn't really matter who's 2nd behind the Pistons in the Eastern Conference. But if you have the top 3 seeds with the ability to choose their first-round opponent, you know the Pistons are going to get the first choice. But imagine the fight down the stretch between the Celtics, the Knicks, and the Cavs to get that 2nd seed, the great importance. Not only do you get home court in the 1st and 2nd round, and may have possibly even the conference finals if the Pistons lose out early on, but you also get 2nd choice for the playoffs behind Detroit. I just think about, like, what about even in the West? OKC or San Antonio, yeah, like, it matters who ends up the first seed in a way because of home court. But can you imagine if the incentive was to get first choice in the Western Conference playoffs? It would matter significantly more. Instead, right now, it's kind of just random. It could be a really good team that ends up the 8th seed. And then and if you're the 1 seed, you're like, well, damn, we wish we were the 7. Well, no, I mean, you should be able to choose your first-round opponent. The NBA tried this, Tom. They did it in the D-League, and executives didn't like it because they didn't want to make the choice. It put their jobs on the line, more pressure. Again, it speaks to what you're talking about. It's for the greater good of an entertainment product, the NBA. And so who cares if some of these executives are crying because they have more pressure on them more than they already do? It's not about you. It's about the fans. It's about creating the best product possible in order to bring in as much money as possible for them and to make the product as best possible for the fans. And something like this is just such an easy win. Imagine the playoff draft, Tom. Oh, my God. It'd be incredible.
It'd be so great. It'd be so great. And Adam does have to fight this, is the idea that after the trade deadline, there's this lull in the NBA season, right? Is that there's no trade talk dominating the conversation. There's no NFL. And so all of these warts in the league are just a lot more under the microscope. And we're just waiting for the playoffs to start. Because, Kev, I don't think you and I would disagree on this. I think the playoffs, all this stuff just goes away. All this talk about all of the things that Adam Silver needs to do to fix this NBA, 95% of that conversation is done in the playoffs because the playoffs are awesome. That's what everyone gets excited for. It's just this regular season that at a certain point, it becomes a preseason. And that's what the NBA needs to fight against, is these games not feeling like they matter. Stars sitting. We just saw the Washington Wizards announce that Keyshawn George was going to be out with an injury, and that they're going to slowly bring him back because they want to be conservative with him. Like, what are we doing here? Like, Adam Silver has to figure out a way to get these games to matter more, to have players playing more. And I think a lot of this is reducing the schedule. So you get rid of back-to-backs. You no longer have the incentive to rest guys on the second night of a back-to-back. I'm covering a team, the Portland Trail Blazers, where Rob Williams doesn't play second nights of back-to-back. But I would love that every game, if I could say, I don't have to think about Rob Williams if he's playing or not. I don't have to think about Matisse Thybulle or Drew Holiday if they're going to play or not, because it's the second night of a back-to-back. No fan should have to look at their schedule and say, oh, it's a second night of a back-to-back. I can't guarantee, I'm not going to go to this game because I'm not sure that my favorite player is going to play. Like that, we need to just carve that part of that conversation out of it. So I think that's a big thing. Another thing we've talked about that you've said will never happen, but if everyone was pulling from the same rope in the same league and looking at the same logo, they would understand rookie free agency would be unbelievably fun. Unbelievably
fun. This one won't happen. But the other ones maybe. We'll see there. I mean, we're just in a lull right now. The annual NBA lull in March, when college basketball is ramping up to March Madness and NFL free agency, big trades happening, World Baseball Classic right now. Adam Silver's going to do something about that, because one of the best stories right now in the NBA, you covered it on The Big Number this week. I had Joe O on my podcast earlier this week talking about the Charlotte Hornets. They had the longest win streak in the NBA at 6 after smacking the Celtics on their home court, 118-89 win on the road in Boston on Wednesday night. The Hornets have won 6 straight games, all of them, Tom, by 15-plus points. That's the longest streak any team has ever had since the 2017-18 Warriors. That's the second longest streak in NBA history since the Warriors. The Hornets have done this. Tom, I've been watching this team all season long. Like earlier in the year, they were fun. They weren't winning, but they were fun. And then they got competitive and fun, and now they're really good and fun. The thoughts crossed my mind. Are they secret contenders? Is there any chance Charlotte could be a secret contender in the Eastern Conference, or are they not there yet?
I'm ready to put them on the board, Kev.
Wow, on one star? Your one-star title tiers.
I even think they might go to a two-star title tier. Wow. I had a comment on my title, TomTheFinder.com, title tiers every Monday. Someone put it in the comments. What do the Hornets got to do? What have the Hornets got to do to get on your title tiers over a team like, say, Miami, which I had on my one-star tier? And I thought, well, let's see what happens after this 5-game streak in which they played all of those the B-League teams, right? They played Indiana, Chicago. They had Portland against without Brandon Sharp or Rob Williams. And I was sitting there being like, all right, let's see what happens against the Celtics. And they threw a no-hitter, Kev. They threw a no-hitter against the Celtics. It was a perfect game. This was a game in which they gave up one live ball turnover. And it happened, I think, first quarter. Brandon Miller threw a bad pass, and it got stolen, and then they stole it right back. They gave up one live ball turnover. The Celtics had one steal, which is, I think, like the first time, one of the first handful of times that's ever happened on their floor in Boston, that they've only gotten one steal in a game. LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, Con Knipple, Musa Diabate. Do you know what they did in that first possession? I don't know if you caught this. The first possession of the game, Charles Lee draws up a pick and roll, inverted pick and roll, with Musa Diabate at the top of the key and LaMelo Ball setting the screen. And you know what happened? They got a wide open dunk for Moose. First play of the game, Charles Lee was like, watch this. Watch what I'm going to do. The first pick and roll action that Musa Diabate has had in his NBA career as the ball handler, first play of the game against the team that he used to work for, the coaching staff that he used to work for. And it was that the entire game was keep up with us. They dominated the Boston Celtics, a team that just had the greatest offensive rating single game in like 50 years, held them to 89 points. Kev, I'm ready to not only put them on my title tiers, I'm thinking about as they go forward, I'm waiting to see what they do through Sunday night. I might even be as crazy to put them at the number two-star title tier, because they've been playing that well and they've beaten great teams. And Wednesday night's win against the Boston Celtics, I mean, what do you say? They went on the road, second night of a back-to-back, and destroyed one of the best teams in the NBA.
They dominated. Derek White was asked after the game, I'm paraphrasing, something along the lines of like, usually when you guys aren't hitting threes, you make up for it with, you know, chasing loose balls and making great defensive rotations and this and that. What stopped you guys from doing that tonight? And Derek White kind of chuckled. He's like, hey, the Charlotte Hornets. And it's just the truth. It's really the only answer. The Hornets just dominated that game. Like you said, the first possession with Moose at the top of the key, driving for the dunk until the final buzzer. I mean, did you see the play? I mean, first of all, as a tribute to LaMelo, I had three choices. I could have gotten a tattoo on my neck, could have gotten a grill, or wore my Big Baller Brand shirt. So I wore the Big Baller Brand shirt today.
Amazing.
It's the best Amazing. Best choice for sure. Best choice for me in my life. So I shout out to LaMelo for the game he had in Boston. I mean, did you see the play where he pump faked twice against Jaylen Brown? And then he threw give the ball up, he got it back, he pump faked again, and then he hit kind of the floater three.
Yep.
It's in the fourth quarter. I mean, the shots this so dude fun. Hits. He is just pure fun. And for a guy people said, oh, he's not a winning player, he sure looks like a winning player to me. I mean, what more do you need to see? Sometimes situation, it reminds me of when Devin Booker, people used to call him a losing player. I was like, I don't know. The team around him is losing, but he's not a losing player. Same thing with LaMelo Ball. There were understandably questions with his decision-making and durability and effort sometimes, but sometimes it's all about environment, and he's in a perfect environment now, and good for LaMelo changing the tune about his story. It's just, well, this team is awesome, Tom. I don't think you're crazy for what it's worth. I don't think you're crazy to say that they're contenders. Over on Threads, at Movie Scouts said to me, will you be shocked when the Hornets win the chip this year? I'd be shocked if they win the championship. But
yeah.
I think this team could win a round, maybe two. I don't think it's crazy to say that. They're that special offensively. And with Moose as their big man, they've been dominant defensively as well. And I think that's why this team is, you know, we're talking about losing teams, Tom, how everybody's losing, nobody's sliding down. The Hornets are just skyrocketing up the standings right now. They're currently the 9 seed in the Eastern Conference. They're 2.5 back from the Sixers for the 6th seed for a guaranteed playoff spot. They're only a game and a half back from the Magic for the 7. And they're tied with the Heat as well. So only a game and a half back from the play-in, needing to win only one game. So Charlotte's in a spot here right now where they could move all the way up to 6, and 7 or 8 is very easily in reach. Where do you think the Hornets finish, Tom? Where do they end up in the standings? Well,
let's do this right now. Who do you feel better about than the Charlotte Hornets coming out of the East? All right, we'll start at the top. Detroit, feel better?
Oh, start all the way at the top, all the way. Yeah, I feel better about Detroit. Better about Detroit.
Boston, do you feel better about Boston than the Charlotte Hornets?
If Tatum comes back, I'll feel better about Boston.
Sure. By the way, that was the first game that they met last night. So just FYI. So in that... in that matchup, yeah, I'm probably picking Boston, but I'm thinking about it, right? The Knicks, do you mm-hmm. feel better about the Knicks' chances over the Charlotte Hornets?
I think so. Yep.
The Cleveland Cavaliers, I think I take the Cavs.
I'll take the Cavs. And then after this, Are they fifth?
Right.
Ahead of Toronto, Philly, Orlando. I'd say so. I'd put Charlotte fifth.
I'd feel best about Charlotte. I think Charlotte right now is the fifth best team in the Eastern Conference. And because the way that they started the season, you know, 4-14, 12-25 or whatever it was, they probably won't get to number five. They're statistically, probabilistically, they can still get to number five. And I think that would be a fair appraisal of how good they've been and where they are in the pecking order of the Eastern Conference. I would safely say that I feel better about the Charlotte Hornets than the Toronto Raptors, Philadelphia 76ers, certainly the Orlando Magic, and now the Miami Heat, where it's just, they're undeniable. I mean, Musa Diabate, 6 assists in that game, and 0 turnovers because everybody had, there was four turnovers there, where Trey Mann had a turnover on the off-ball screen. Sion James had a turnover on off-ball screen. In the opening minute, I think it was Con Knipl had a... He stepped on the sideline, which I don't even think was the correct call. So that was it was a dead ball turnover. That was it. I mean, it was an amazing game against one of the best defenses and best teams in the league on the road, a second night of back-to-back. And it's just... When you look at how Musa Diabate has changed everything for them, how hard he plays, sets strong screens, the passing that he had, he hit Con Knipl with a pass there in the second half, I think it was, under the basket where Con just rolled off. And while we're here, Kev, what was Joe Mazzulla doing guarding Con Knipl last night? They were doing drop coverage on the best three-point shooter in the NBA, rolling off these screens and just giving him the green light, broad daylight. Had so much room to shoot. And of course, he had 20 points in small amount of minutes because of the blowout. But I didn't understand at all why they were so insistent on leaving Con Knipl open and just going drop coverage. It was insane to me. It just seemed like this was a throwaway game by the coaching staff. The Jaylen Brown had a rough start. This was, as much as I want to say, this was the Charlotte Hornets just willing themselves to another blowout victory. I had a lot of questions about the game plan against this Charlotte Hornets team. It seemed like Joe Mazzulla this was not his best game either.
It did feel like a throwaway game for Boston. That's for sure. And that's not to take anything away from Charlotte at all. It's just some strange choices for a team that so often, and Mazzulla, coach of Mazzulla, that has pulled the right strings
that play right
all
there.
Year long.
They just showed the play of Musa hitting Con Knipl for a screen. And this is like when you got your guy who's on a two-way contract acting like Jokic at the top of the key with Con Knipl off the ball. It's just like, what do you do? Like, I feel like they're just scratching the surface of what they can be.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And they have some barometer tests coming up. They got the Spurs in San Antonio on the 14th. They have 3 games and 4 nights to finish their homestand at the end of the month against the Knicks, the Sixers, and then the Celtics. And they're their last 4 games of the season against the Wolves, Celtics, Pistons, and Knicks. We'll see if those teams are trying to win those games for seeding purposes in the East or the West or not. But I'm sure Charlotte will be trying to win those. Speaking of the Celtics, a lot of noise that Jason Tatum could potentially be making his return on Friday. Bill Simmons mentioned that on his podcast. It has not been announced by Boston yet. I have not heard if that's actually happening this Friday either. We shall see. Maybe it'll be announced by the end of the day. But I found it very funny, Tom. Carmelo Anthony on 7 p.m. in Brooklyn was talking about Tatum's return, and he said, JT's got to be very mature about the situation. There's no egos. There's no pride. We get a chance to come back and win a championship. So just let me put my pride and my ego to the side for these next 3 months and continue to let JB steer the ship, because he's proven that he's doing it at an MVP level. I think it is so funny and so ironic to hear Carmelo Anthony talking about what Jason Tatum needs to do to win basketball games. It is ridiculous that this career loser, underachiever, who's never won anything, is talking about Jason Tatum, what he needs to do to sacrifice. Tatum, more than anybody else, wins an NBA Finals where he's not even scoring, but he was unbelievable because of what he did defensively, defending across positions, playmaking with 7-8 assists per game in that finals. He is a do-it-all talent who doesn't need to get buckets to make a positive impact, unlike Carmelo Anthony, who when he wasn't scoring from mid-range on his low-efficiency jump shots, wasn't making a positive impact. And that's why his team's always flamed out. That's why they didn't win a lot. So it's just really rich to hear this coming from Carmelo Anthony, not to put him on full blast for no reason at all. But I just found it crazy to hear Melo talking about this, Tom. Tatum, rightfully so, by the way, just to bring this on Jaylen Brown here at this point, Tom, Jaylen Brown is a great player. Don't get me wrong, but his efficiency has fallen off a cliff the last couple of months. They're not going anywhere with Jaylen Brown as their best player. They need Jason Tatum to be their best player for this team to win an NBA Finals, or at least be side by side with Jaylen Brown. You can't win a Finals with Jaylen Brown as your standalone best player. They need Jason Tatum, and they can't have Jason Tatum just be a role player either. Just very silly, Tom.
I mean, I looked into this for a Yahoo Sports story this week. Go check it out. Is historically, like, I thought where we were going with Carmelo is like, hey, just take the rest of the year off and come back at 100% next year. Like, don't worry about this year. But to frame it, not from a medical standpoint, like, Carmelo's not out here saying,
You mean Tatum coming back. Yeah.
Carmelo's not looking at Jason Tatum and saying, like, look, man, just make sure 100% your Achilles tendon is ready to go, and that you're not trying to fast track this in order to be ready ahead of the playoffs so that you can ramp up for the postseason. That's not what he's saying. If he did say that, I'd be a lot more on board, because for the story that I wrote for Yahoo Sports, I looked at the last 30 Achilles tear recoveries in the NBA, and it's clear to me that if the choice is between Kobe Bryant and coming back in 8 months and having a big marketing ploy around it and having a national conversation about making your return in 10 months, which is what it is right now, or take the season off, make sure you're 100% correct, and do the Kevin Durant story, which is Kevin Durant before that 2019-2020 season with the Brooklyn Nets, he said, I'm taking the year off and I'm making sure that my body's right because I want to perform at my best for the long term. And man, Kev, KD looks so right. Took 18 months off. And yes, COVID kind of elongated that time recovery there. But he was 18 months from playing. And he's one of the best scorers to this day at age 37. And no one would know by the way that he's played through his mid-30s and late-30s that he had an Achilles tear at age 30. And so if I'm Jason Tatum and I'm hearing that Carmelo Anthony quote, I'm like, yeah, man. You're putting your ego, you're talking about egos, but you're saying, wait, you want me to sit because Jaylen Brown individually is feeling good about himself and playing at MVP level? No, don't make it about Jaylen Brown's ego and MVP on his play on both ends of the floor. Think about what it is about me on medically. Like, that's where I'm at, is I'm just a little nervous because it's not like if Jason Tatum, Kev, sat here and said, hey, I feel like I could come back now, but I might need another month. He doesn't really have that liberty because the playoffs start in a month. Does he really want to come back and say, I'm going to come back in the first round of the playoffs? We've never seen that happen before. And so my trepidation about this story is that I can't recall. Maybe there's been a star player that returned to a team on the eve of the postseason and it ended well. I can't recall when that happened, but this is really this is unprecedented territory, I would say. And I hope that Jason Tatum is thinking about this clearly and just being like, long-term view, I want what's best for me in my next 10 years in the NBA, just like KD. And I'm just thinking, if it's between KD door or the Kobe door, I know which I'm taking.
He should come back tomorrow. That's what I think. Hey, come back and try to win a championship. It's wide open. You get a chance. Maybe 6 extra months makes a huge difference. Maybe it doesn't at all. It may not have with KD either. KD may be in the same place today had he come back 6 months prior. So it's impossible to say. We don't know. We just don't know.
But can I ask you this? Would you feel better about him playing 16 minutes a game for the next month, or do you want him come back and they play like he's Jason Tatum of old.
Yeah, whatever feels right. I mean, he's playing 5-on-5 with the team. They know a lot more than we do about how he's feeling, how he's looking. I'd say start him at 25, something along those lines. I hope he comes back. I think it would be an awesome story to see Boston try to make a run as good as they've been this year. And also, it would just be very interesting to see how that Brown-Tatum dynamic would work. But I'll tell you what, I mean, Jaylen Brown, as good as he is, he's not the MVP this year. He's a very good player. He's an all-NBA guy. He's been excellent to keep Boston in this position. But they need Jason Tatum. And Carmelo Anthony talking about ego. Very funny. And we'll be right back after this break. Speaking about injury-prone players, Kawhi Leonard, I mentioned the Philadelphia. I wrote about Jared McCain this week on Yahoo Sports. And I mentioned within that article how the Sixers ducked the tax again. For 6 years in a row, they've done it. And there's a Maury quote from his post-deadline presser where he's talking about how the four picks they got for McCain, the one first this year and 3 second-round picks in the future, they tried using those in other deals. And I haven't heard, at the time, I hadn't heard who they were targeting. In the weeks since, I've talked to a bunch of executives around the league, and the name that popped up a couple of times was Kawhi Leonard, as one of the players Philadelphia was making inquiries about in a potential deal at the deadline, where it would have been Paul George and picks for Kawhi Leonard. Nothing happened there. I don't think it was even close. I don't think the Clippers had any interest in that. I do think, like, if you're thinking along those lines, maybe they could have also tried to get more picks in a deal, you know, tried to flip George for more picks in the opposite type of thing. Like, maybe they could have went to the Warriors for Jimmy Butler and picks, but again, no interest there. The Warriors weren't trading Butler until the summer anyway. So, but clearly the Sixers were trying to compile picks for somebody out there, Tom.
I think we all know who that player was. I mean,
you think it was Giannis Antetokounmpo? That's who you think, yes. Giannis.
Yeah. I think knowing Daryl Morey and how he's always big game hunting, yes. I think it was Giannis. And the Kawhi stuff probably was happening, right? Like, I think that's what Daryl Morey looks at is, says, how do I get as many top 10 all-time players as I can on one team? And if he thinks Jared McCain is not that guy, he will try to go figure out a way to turn him into the assets that maybe I can go get a Giannis Antetokounmpo or a Kawhi Leonard. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And look, hearing what he said about how he traded Jared McCain and he's pretty sure that he was selling high on Jared McCain, I think you rightfully said in your column that if you think you're selling high on Jared McCain because of substitution patterns and playing time, then look at what he's doing over in OKC and maybe you need to look at the head coach, because like, selling high is quite the statement, right? For to trade Jared McCain after what he did for the first couple months of the season last year before he got hurt, and then to see what he's doing over there now, you were rightful to call out and be like, that's a coaching problem. That's not a Jared McCain problem.
100% was. And ultimately, I think that deal is just going to end up looking worse and worse for Philadelphia. Because I'll tell you what, Tom, Jared McCain might not play 25 minutes per game every night for the Thunder in the playoffs when J-Dub is back and A.J. Mitchell is back, but he's an option on the bench for Mark Daigneault to go to. There's going to be situations where Daigneault prefers the ball handling and creation of Jared McCain over more the movement shooting of Isaiah Joe, because McCain can also be a movement shooter. And there's going to be a night at some point in the playoffs where McCain drops 25 points or even 30 points. And that's going to be one of those nights where the Sixers, probably home already in the second round or third round, they're going to be like, really? Where do we find guys like that? Or guys like Isaiah Joe, who, by the way, they had on their team before as well. Two former Sixers on the Thunder. It's all, I mean, as I said in that column, the Sixers, everything's always weird there, but they did this one to themselves. And that's the bottom line with Philadelphia, unfortunately, and what is, hopefully they get Joel Embiid looking healthy again by the end of the year. I want them to be competitive. I want them to make a run, but this team seems demoralized. That Maxey quote he had after their loss on Tuesday night as well, where he's like, he wasn't even asked about the trade deadline. He was just asked about the spirit of the team. And Maxi himself came out of nowhere and said, the deadline was tough for us. We got to get over it. And Tyrese Maxey wasn't saying that purely because, as he said, they lost a good friend and teammate in Jared McKean, a guy they all liked. He first said that because this organization is ducking the tax 6 years in a row. Last year, they traded 2 second-round draft picks to get under the tax. The year before that, they traded a second-round pick to get under the tax, to dump a salary. This year, they deal Jared McKean. And then they moved Eric Gordon as well, a veteran in that locker room. If you're a player on that team, Tom, you're demoralized. Joel Embiid, prior to the deadline, had said, I hope we don't duck the tax again. I feel like we have a real shot. I love the guys in this locker room. And then they go trade the most beloved guy in the locker room, Jared McKean, in order to get under the tax. Just that's got to be tough, knowing the owner's not supporting your mission to win a championship.
Here's the crazy part. Imagine if Paul George didn't get banned for 25 games.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Because that shaved $5 million of luxury tax payments because they don't get charged for his salary based on a league suspension. So imagine how much gutting that Daryl Morey had to do if they didn't have Paul George suffering that 25-game suspension. So that's why, you know, on Basketball Illuminati, we were joking. We were just like, I mean, doesn't this kind of help all the luxury tax problem, that ducking the tax if Paul George gets suspended for 25 games? Because in that story for ESPN, Bobby Marks, he reported that they will save over $5 million of luxury tax payments, leaving the team a little over $1 million over the threshold, making it easier for the 76ers to dip out of the tax without harming the roster. Well, they did harm the roster because they needed to duck the tax. And Daryl Morey's got to eat it, man. He's got to eat it because he's the president of basketball operations. But as you wrote, it's an ugly look. It's a bad look for the franchise when you got billionaires trying to duck the tax. And one thing we should point out, it's not so much that they're ducking the tax. It's that they're locking in luxury tax payouts, revenue sharing payouts. And so when you frame it as, oh, they're ducking the tax, don't forget, they're also making themselves eligible to get millions of dollars in revenue sharing that they otherwise would not have gotten. So that's why these GMs are so willing to do it, is because those billionaires, man, they like their money.
The billionaire cheapskate, Josh Harris. What a shame. What a shame for Sixers fans and that amazing fan base, very passionate Philly fan base. They probably would have dealt Oubre or Grimes or Drummond or all of them if they didn't get that Paul George suspension to get under. Tom, this was a lot of fun today. We have March Madness around the corner. We got NBA final stretch going on. We're in a lull with the NBA at this moment, but we get some good games. I didn't even talk about the Knicks last night and their loss, missing two jumpers in the final moments and their loss against the Thunder. There's still some good games happening, but we are in a lull right now, but there's still some fun, interesting things happening. You and I will be back again next Thursday. I get another pod on Monday. You get the big number next Wednesday as well. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today, man. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, catch the buzz. I'm glad we spent so much talking about the Hornets. There's a lot happening in Charlotte. Pack Your Dives, my Top Chef podcast here in Charlotte. Top Chef is live this week. We had a big event on Monday.
You hosted a live thing this week, right, with Top Chef? How'd that go?
Yeah, we did a live fireside chat where I moderated a panel with Gail Simmons, Kristen Kish, and Tom Colicchio, who's, by the way, a huge Tar Heels fan, like would take Dean Smith out to dinner at Gramercy Tavern back in the day in New York City. Told that story. Got lots of cool stuff happening in Charlotte right now. It's a very good time to be a sports fan and a foodie fan here in Charlotte. So yeah, very exciting stuff. Pack your knives.
I wanna make a trip to Charlotte either before the end of the season or during the playoffs. When I had Joe O, he's Charlotte based, on the podcast earlier this week, and we talked about doing like a group meal out there. You can come too. Where should we go, Tom? Like, what's some of the spots? What are some options for us in the Charlotte area?
Oh, I got a list for you. Start with Custom Shop, my favorite neighborhood restaurant. Gail Simmons, also on Top Chef, she loves that place. It's a great city that is on the rise, not just in the NBA, but for sure on the rise in terms of the food in this town. And you look, hey, it might be the NBA Finals where we're getting together in Charlotte.
you never know. You never know. You can't rule it out. I always like North Carolina. Every time I visited there, Durham for Duke games. I haven't been to North Carolina yet to see the Tar Heels, but Duke games are amazing. I don't know. It's very nice here. People are very nice in North Carolina. It's on my list of states that I'd consider living in, moving to. Maybe someday. Who knows? It seems like a good time to go out there with the Charlotte Hornets.
That's right.
Playing amazing basketball.
Feel the buzz!
Tom, yes. Tom, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Have a good weekend. And thank you, everybody, for watching us live on YouTube. Please subscribe to Yahoo Sports NBA if you have not done so already. Give this video a like as well. Thank you to the whole crew for producing today's episode. Thanks to Tom for joining me, as always. Thanks to Father John Misty for the music. We'll be back again on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody.